You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Wednesday here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter here with Ray Fittipaldi, one of our Steelers beat writers. We have a lot to talk about after owners' meetings. We'll get into the rules changes in a bit, but I want to lead with some of the moves the Steelers have made to try to round out their depth chart in several positions. There are a lot of the late moves have been more smaller moves that have addressed things and that still don't address some of the bigger needs the Steelers need to fill on their roster. We'll talk about what that means. Also, some of the visits that they've had as far as the top 30 visits for the NFL draft. And then again, the rule changes. It's going to be a big episode here on the North Shore Drive podcast. Let's get into it. You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Hosted by Christopher Carter. Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with one of our great Steelers beat writers, Ray Fittipaldi. As always, you can find this show on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this YouTube channel to get all of the daily content that comes out from all of our Pittsburgh sports writers throughout the week, and as well as the Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast. And as always, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. I was just there earlier today. Mike's Beer Bar gives you over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap, and they're always switching new ones in and out to give you new options. They also have over 20 televisions, and they've done some recent renovations that you want to check out. Go to Mike's Beer Bar. More on them later. Ray, we have been seeing a flurry of free agent signings by the Steelers, deals to get guys in, but none of these guys are, at least in my book, solidified starters in either of their positions. You got now two wide receivers, the most recently being Cordarrelle Patterson. He's a running back slash receiver who's been a special teamer, and he's been in the league for 12. This will be his 12th season in the league this upcoming year. But he joins also with Quez Watkins, a slot receiver they got from the Eagles who didn't have a whole lot of experience. And then they also were able to get Kyle Allen, a backup quarterback who's been bouncing around the NFL, this being his fifth team. And then also Dean Lowry, a defensive lineman with several years of experience who looks to be more of a depth option there. But none of these signings address some of the big needs the Steelers have right now. And those big needs still being they need a starting center. They traded away Deontay Johnson and don't have another number one or number two wide receiver to pair with George Pickens. What do these small moves tell you, if anything, about what the Steelers are trying to line up in the near future?
Yeah, I don't know if they mean a lot, Chris. You know, when I look at Van Jefferson or Quez Watkins, if they were to acquire, let's say, another free agent, or they drafted two receivers, I don't think it would be big news if, say, Watkins or Jefferson was cut at the end of training camp. You know, these are vet minimum deals. I don't think there's a lot of signing bonus money or a lot of dead cap money that would be an issue there. So to me, yeah, that's exactly what they are. They're depth signings. The Patterson one that was reported late Tuesday afternoon, to me, that's the interesting one. You know, you got the new kickoff rule.
Yeah.
And to me, it's still confusing. I kind of want to watch it for four or five games until I make an opinion of it, you know, for myself. But it seems like with this move by the Steelers, they think returns are going to be back in play a little bit. I mean, that's my assumption with the Patterson signing. He hasn't been a guy who's, been a big part of offensive game plans throughout his career. Maybe that changes with Arthur Smith. I doubt it at age 33, but to me, that's probably the most intriguing one. He's bounced around, but he is, or at least was, a Pro Bowl slash all pro caliber returner back in the day.
Yeah, that's the thing, though, is that like he was back in the day. And I mean, if you look at his overall profile, you're like, you're talking about a guy who was literally on the Hall of Fame all 2010s team for his special teams experience. You know, he's won a Super Bowl with the Patriots. He's been a four-time Pro Bowler, four-time All-Pro. Like, he brings a ton of experience. I mean, heck, I remember when he was coming into the draft for the Vikings, like, there was a lot of talk about him being – I mean, he was a first-round pick back in the day. Like, he was a guy that a lot of people were excited to see in the NFL, and he's been more of a depth piece. He's, you know, as far as a receiver, he's never had more than 548 yards in a season, but he's also doubled as a running back, where he had about 695 yards just two seasons ago for the Atlanta Falcons. But where does that fit into the Steelers structure right now? Because Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren are the 1-2 punch at running back, and, you know, wide receiver, he's not a number two right now, at least from what I've seen production wise.
No, but could he be a number three running back slash number five receiver slash your kickoff returner? What did he do? Has he done punts? Or has he strictly been a kickoff return guy?
Let me look at his numbers right here for a second.
You know, for me, Chris,
not many punts. I think in his career, he's returned one punt in his career. Okay. He's primarily a kick returner.
So you're looking at him as a kick returner, but if he fills in the back end of this roster, because it's been said about this draft class that it's not a great running backs draft class. So I don't know that you would spend a late draft pick on a running back. Maybe this is. Okay, this is our number three running back slash return man, maybe number five receiver. He's going to dress on game days, but he's going to be a back end of the roster type of player. To me, that would be okay. But back to your original point about Quez Watkins and Van Jefferson, you know, how do they fit in? Because you know they're going to draft, a receiver probably on day two to be a starter. So you got Pickens, you got the rookie. And you got those three guys I just mentioned, plus Calvin Austin the third. So you're already up to seven receivers. They can keep six, but that's as many as they'll keep. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in the summertime. But like I said, I don't think it would be a huge deal if Van Jefferson or Quez Watkins was not on this roster.
Yeah.
Come opening day in September.
I'm right with you there. Like, I wouldn't be shocked, but I mean, again, these guys are depth pieces here that are just being brought in to kind of support what the situation is as far as like those positions. If they don't get the guy that they really want in the draft, well, they have a smattering of guys to at least come bring into training camp right now. And I get it. Like, this is part of what this is part of what's going to happen. With the Steelers, they want to set themselves up so they're a little bit more balanced in the NFL. We go going into the draft, we've talked about a lot. They don't want to ever be in a position where they don't have at least some sort of option at each position before that. But again, I know Mike Tomlin, mentioned Omar Khan mentioned the potential of like maybe trading for a center, but like, is that these moves to me, like, these are low level signing moves that are trying to, at least give some help at these positions. To me, this might signal that, like, hey, they're doing these things, but like that's because maybe there's something else on the horizon that they're expecting to open up and fill some of those other bigger needs that they need.
Yeah. I mean, listen, as I look at this draft, Chris, and we've talked about it really since January, very, very deep offensive tackle class, very, very deep receivers class. And I don't want to say very deep centers class, because I think you got the top three with Frazier, Barton, and Jackson Powers Johnson. Then there's a little bit of a drop off, but even those guys that are going to go second, third round, I think there's some potential future starters there, if not plug and play guys. So, I think they will have options when they, when draft day comes on April 25th. The one thing that Tomlin did say this week at the owners' meetings, and this pertains more to receivers than it does offensive linemen, he was asked about rookies coming into play, and he mentioned the proliferation of 7-on-7 camps and how receivers and corners are better prepared to play now than they ever were, just because they're exposed to NFL-type passing games earlier and earlier. So they have a great feel for what NFL OCs and head coaches want to do. So, you know, when we're talking about receiver, that tells me, okay, we can get a starter day two, second round, maybe even third round. Maybe we get a slot corner third round, and, you know, that guy could be somebody who has a role as a rookie. So that's another way to look at this thing. You know, I think the quality, depth at receiver and corner bodes well for them as they approach the 3-day draft here in another month or so.
Certainly, there's a lot of aspects to cover there as far as what they're doing. Let's talk about some of the players that they're bringing in for their top 30 visits among their draft guys to see who are they looking at in the draft. We'll do that and talk about some of the rules changes in the NFL, all here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter, Ray Fittipaldo. But first, I want to remind you, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. Maybe you were part of the crazy crowd that went to Mike's Beer Bar, but it was a festive place to be for the Duquesne Dukes this past weekend, Ray. It was packed with plenty of Duquesne fans, and it was a great place to be taking in March Madness, and it's a great place to continue to take in March Madness as the Sweet 16 resumes again this week. Go to Mike's Beer Bar, where they have over 20 televisions for you to catch all the action, and now they've got renovations done where it looks a lot more spacious, and the TVs are bigger, and they still have over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. Also with amazing food options like their steak on a stone, where you get your choice cut of steak brought to you on a heated stone. Every time you cut off a bite for it, press that bite into the stone, and then you get to choose how well done you want every piece of steak that you put in your mouth. It's an amazing option to go to Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh, on Federal Street, right across the street from PNC Park. Go there today to Mike's Beer Bar, and when you get there, tell them Chris sent you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back here in the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Ray Fittipaldo. Ray, let's talk about some of these top 30 visits here, because the Steelers are starting to pick up, you know, and build their total list out here. And they've had some recent additions of players who have visited or are about to visit. Who are some of the players that you've seen added to this list of draft prospects that caught your eye?
Yeah, only a handful so far. They did not have any visitors on Monday or Tuesday because Mike Tomlin and GM Omar Khan and a lot of the other personnel in that building were at the owners' meetings down in Orlando. But within the last week, they've had Ricky Pearsall, a receiver from Florida, in there. Malachi Corley, a receiver from Western Kentucky, is scheduled to come in. If not this week, I believe the week after. So he'll be in for a visit. And then you've had some offensive tackle prospects come in. Last week, Talias Fuaga, the big right tackle from Oregon State, was in for a visit. You know, that's interesting to me, Chris, because I think a lot of people think he's going to be gone in the first 10 to 15 picks. I haven't seen him, you know, below 15 in any of these mock drafts. So if the Steelers are going to want to draft him, you would think it would be another trade-up situation, much in the same way we saw last year with Broderick Jones. And they also brought in another late-round tackle prospect from Georgia State. He was in last week. So, you know, the early visits so far, offensive line, receivers, and that certainly meshes with two of their top needs here in the first couple of days of the draft. The Steelers never really try to dissuade you from thinking what they're going to do. They might be telegraphing what they're going to do, but I think receiver and offensive tackle right now are two of their biggest needs, and those are the types they're bringing in for their visits, at least the early visits, as it stands after a week or so.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting to see those guys here, and I'm with you on Fuaga. Like, I like Fuaga as a player. I think he'd be a great fit. Him and Broderick Jones would be a massive pair of tackles, athletic, strong, physical, who could be a good tone, great tone setters for the Steelers for the next decade on the offensive line. But like you said, I'm not so sure he makes it to the Steelers at 20th overall. They might need to trade up. Now, I just recently did a mock draft on for the Locked On Podcast Network where we did it with all the different hosts, and Fuaga fell to 20, and I was like, well, if that's just going to happen, I'll take that easily. But I'm not so sure the rest of the NFL lets that happen because there's plenty of guys there. But I think that's what's interesting about this draft class, Ray, is that, you know, along with the tackles, you have a lot of corners that people want to get, a lot of receivers that people want to get. There could be five quarterbacks that go off the board before the Steelers pick. That would leave it down to 15 other positions that would need to get picked before them. And you're definitely throwing at least three receivers in with that. So you're talking maybe 12 other position players that need to be picked there. And who knows who wants, you know, a top, who knows if someone wants a top defensive lineman, Newton out of Illinois, the guy out of Texas that's supposed to go, Byron Murphy, that's supposed to go in the first round. There's always movers and shakers that just surprise you with where they go. That happened years ago when I think it was the Raiders that selected Cleveland Farrell. And at the time, the Steelers really wanted Dev Bush. And it was, hoping that they could find a way for him to move up to them. But if Devin Bush went in the top eight, there was no chance that they had it getting him. But when the Raiders took Cleveland Farrell, I remember that being that was the pick that nobody thought would happen because it was like, we didn't think Farrell was worth that much. But you never know what other front offices see in their evaluations, and that can always shake things up. So there's a chance that a Fuaga could fall to them. But you brought up some receivers there, Malachi Corley, Ricky Pearsall, guys like that. They're not necessarily first-round guys, but they could be day-two guys that I think they would be good options to pair with George Pickens as a good number two on the Steelers roster to have to throw the ball to.
Yeah, probably more slot types than outside types. If you look at Corley, he's been compared to both Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, and kind of a coincidence, but maybe not, that the Steelers have been rumored to be in on some I don't want to say trade talks, but some speculation with the 49ers and Ayuk going into the final year of his deal. So, those things have quieted within the last week or so. But if you can't acquire a guy like Ayuk, then maybe you go out and get the next Ayuk. We'll see what Corley has. I know he played at a smaller school than Ayuk, so people are wondering about, the caliber of competition he faced. But, man, was he productive for pretty much all 4 years there. I mean, he had 29 touchdowns. I looked it up earlier today, over 3,000 receiving yards. So, I mean, that guy's just a really good player. And then Pearsall, too, more of a slot, not that run and catch type of a threat that Corley would be, but he's just a really solid guy. Oh, I think he could step in and, if not be a number two right away, be a very solid number three as a rookie. So, yeah, they'll have options there at receiver, and those are just two of the first names that will be in for visits, and there's going to be a lot more to come, I believe.
I believe so too. There's a lot of moves, and here's the other thing: we have now seen a lot of pretty strong moves made by this front office in recent years, trades to fix the roster, trading up in the draft, trading down in the draft to trade up later in the draft. They've been shown the ability or the willingness to move up and down the board. So I don't put it past the Steelers to make a lot of different moves here in the coming days of the NFL draft. We'll keep you apprised on that, but we got to talk about some of these rules changes, Ray, because the NFL's owners meetings, that was, whereas a lot of people wanted to talk to Mike Tomlin and Art Rooney about the new quarterback situation. This is what a lot of them were voting on. And that included new kickoff rules and the hip drop tackle rule, that we'll address. We'll get into all those in a minute here on the North Shore Drive podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Back Back here in the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Ray Fittipato. Ray, let's start with the controversial but apparently universally accepted rule. That's the hip drop tackle rule that now makes it illegal for a defender to wrap their arms around a player who's running with the football. And then instead of trying to drive them into the ground, just give up their body weight and try to tackle them by bringing them down on their own legs. Now, this is a play that has injured several players over the past several years, including one running back, Kenyon Drake, who posted about it and saying like, hey, I posted about this years ago when it ruined, you know, part of my career because it was a move. But there's also defenders, including past defenders like J.J. Watt, who have come out and say and said like, hey, like, you know, this isn't helping the defense, like, you know. There's understandable situations where a hip drop tackle is dangerous, but there's also plenty of times where it's not going to be, you know, perceived as, there are going to be normal tackles that were considered normal for years are going to be perceived as dangerous tackles. And we already see plenty of judgment calls that just don't make sense in the NFL. Where do you stand at on the hip drop tackle rule? Was it something that you saw as absolutely necessary, like a lot of people in the NFL said, or do you think this is something that could be lead to just more controversy as far as what is and isn't a legal tackle in the NFL?
Yeah. I mean, I find it funny that the defensive players are always on the wrong end of the stick here. Like, okay, you want to talk about player safety, and I get it, owners are protecting their assets, but how can running backs literally put their hand on the head of a defender, bounce the head of that defender off the turf,
yeah,
and that not be a penalty, yeah, right? So there's a double standard there, you know, for defensive and for offensive players. So I get it. But if you want to just talk about it strictly from a safety perspective, I get it. You know, I guess one thing is, Chris, if you're chasing an offensive player from the side or from the rear, I suppose now you could just dive for the ankles, dive for the knees, and don't land on top of them. I mean, more of a rugby tackle type of thing that I think is being taught at the lower levels now. So whatever way you look at it, the onus is going to be on the defenders now. And, you know, to your point about the officiating, I mean, it definitely puts more pressure on them, and that, you know, they're not going to be perfect in this. And as we've seen with other rules changes, they are always going to err on the side of what the NFL owners want. So if they think it's something, they're going to call it. The replay review might not say that, but they're always going to err on the side of caution because this is what the NFL owners want in protecting their assets.
Absolutely. I look at that and I think that, man, like, there's I get the safety part of it. And this is like, I'm bringing that up not to say like I think one way or the other. I do think that they need to improve the safety of this game. But I also think it's not as easy of a conversation. Oh, yeah, just make the game safer. Duh. Like, you know, because at the same time, you know, the NFL just said, oh, by the way, you're playing on Christmas, and Christmas is on a Wednesday this year. And that's totally safe for a team to just have to. Oh, you're going to play on Wednesday. It's even shorter of a series of day off than the normal Thursday night football games. And it's just, NFL players for years have said Thursday night football is extremely dangerous to their health. So I just look at this and I think like, man, like, I get why they're doing this. The NFL, one, when they often make these rule changes, they're doing so to protect the league from lawsuits, to show like, hey, we are actively taking steps towards making the game safer and limiting injuries, especially to big name players. But I don't think it's truly altruistic in saying like, oh, we really care about the safety. It's trying to eliminate things that they know that they can get sued over if they don't show a willingness to try to police these things that are causing multiple injuries. So again, like, I'm all for safety of the players, but I do wonder, you know, like J.J. Watt in his post was like, you know, how much longer before this becomes flag football when you can't just make a solid tackle on a guy? Because so many things, even certain blocks that were, you know, that didn't necessarily attack just the knee or anything like that, are considered illegal now. And it's becoming very specific as far as how you have to go at contacting somebody in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate because you obviously can't hit above the shoulders now. Neck or head area is an automatic flag.
Yep.
The hip drop tackle thing now, you can't really jump on a guy to try to tackle him. You know, and offensive players and defensive players talk about this all the time. The knees are still fair game. And I suppose you could say a hip drop tackle You could injure somebody's hip, as we saw with Le'Veon Bell against the Bengals, but you could also injure a knee or an ankle because there's such force coming down on it. I guess, like I said earlier, Chris, I guess you can just, you know, put a head on a guy's knee, you know, dive at his ankles, try to trip him up. I guess that's what we're down to, you know, for NFL players. It's kind of unfortunate. It's a dangerous game. It's never going to be a safe game. But until, you know, until these lawsuits stop, I think the owners are going to be forced to try it, to try to make it as safe as possible. And I just think this is another rules change that, you know, speaks to that.
I certainly think so. Another rules change they made was the kickoff rules. Now, this one's, it's a little tough to explain this without the visuals to let people know. But basically, they're taking away the kickoff element where you kick it off from your own 30 and the ball flies down, you know, 70 yards down the field to the other end zone. You're kicking off from, I believe, is now your opponent's 40, I think it is. And then there's like only a 10-yard gap between your line and the other team's offense, and you're to kick it inside a certain space, you know, for the other team to return it, basically making it so that guys aren't running top speeds before they contact each other on kickoffs, which that itself does make sense to make things safer for teams. And there's some people who are excited. Like, I talked to Pat Narduzzi about it, you know, on after Pitt's Tuesday practice, and just on the collegiate level, he's like, yeah, it makes sense to not have these guys running full speed for no reason when 80% of the kickoffs go through the end zone anyways. But what's your readout on what this rule might do either for safety or for competition levels as well to maybe make the kickoffs make the kickoff play more relevant again?
Yeah. I mean, just looking at it from a football perspective, you know, the days of the guy who runs the 4.2 40, who catches it and just hits the wedge, you know, those days are over. Now you're looking for that shifty guy who can maneuver in tight spaces. And it's, I don't want to say it's more like a punt return, but it's definitely not like an old kick return. So it's going to be sort of a, you know, a feeling out period, I think, for all special teams coaches when it comes to that. You know, I don't argue with the safety impact of it, obviously. When you're running at 20, 25 miles per hour and you're knocking heads with somebody, that's not, you know, that's going to cause more injuries than you know, the shorter kickoffs. Again, we saw it last year with Gunnar Olszewski, Chris, you know, not understanding roles. And that's, last year it was simpler. You know, you could fair catch in bounds and you can take the ball on the 25. And now it seems like there's even more things for returners to digest and to have to comprehend. I don't know that it's a bad thing, but we even saw last year when it was simple that guys screw it up. So I think this will present, you know, another set of challenges for special teams coaches to get their guys up to speed on what the rules are and how it affects field position.
Yeah, I can see Danny Smith chewing a lot of bubble gum over this. But certainly yeah, that too. But I think that's part of the interesting part here. These new rules are going to come new opportunities. I mean, heck, you know, we saw in the Super Bowl that the Niners didn't fully understand, you know, what the overtime rules were. So, like, what's going to happen with kickoff rules? I think it could be interesting. I still need to see how it plays out. The best example for us was this in the XFL, where this rule kind of originated, where they came up with this rule that the NFL is now adopting. We'll see it in what's now called the UFL, that's combining the USFL with the XFL. And how it plays out there. I think that'll be like our first chance to kind of study it, to get a feel for how it'll be in the pros. But as we know, the players in those leagues are nowhere near the athletes that are in the NFL for a reason. And it's going, and I think that's still going to just be a rough draft of what we're going to see. And like anything else in the NFL, teams are going to try to get innovative at some point. There's going to be teams that come up with ideas that may look revolutionary or may not look revolutionary, may look ridiculous. But I think it's going to be interesting to see who tries to step out of the ordinary and what becomes of it. And if it makes the kickoff returner position, like Cordero Patterson, more important or less important in the game.
Yep. Yeah. Do you squib it now? I mean, there's even, you could squib it, but if it's not within a certain area, then teams get the ball to 40, right? So, I mean, if you squib it, your kicker better be good at squibbing it and putting it in a spot where it's, you know, where it's advantageous for your kickoff team to cover it. So, I mean, there's so many things to consider here, but, you know, when you look at it from a safety perspective, I think it's time, but I kind of want to see how it plays out before I, you know, offer some big opinions on it.
Absolutely. He's Ray Fittipaldo. I'm Chris Carter. You can find both of our work at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, post-gazette.com for all of our written work. Find us here on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube for these shows like the North Shore Drive podcast. It's every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but also on all the different shows that we have here, where it comes to Pitt Sports, the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Pittsburgh Penguins, all the different things that we cover here for the Post-Gazette Sports Department. We'll have more here on this channel soon. And check us out again Friday, where we check out more of the Steelers moves and how they're getting ready as they continue to get closer to the NFL draft. We'll see you here on the North Shore Drive podcast. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.